Good morning and welcome to the Flutter H1 results update call. My name is Jo and I'm your operator today. If you require any assistance during the call, just key star then zero and operator will be happy to assist. Today's call is recorded. There will be a chance to ask questions shortly, but first I will hand over to Peter Jackson, Group CEO of Flutter. Please go ahead, Peter.
Thank you, Jo. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. With me today is Jonathan Hill, our CFO. Hopefully, you've had a chance to read our announcement and watch the presentation we released this morning. But for those that have not yet, I'll just cover off a few of the key points. Firstly, we're very happy with the progress we've made in continuing to scale our U.S. business. Flutter U.S. is now 50% bigger in revenue terms than our next nearest online competitor, with the gap between FanDuel and each of its competitors widening during the first half. Our sports betting and gaming customer base is now three times as big as it was just 12 months ago, having added 1.7 million customers in the last year alone. We believe that our superior sports product and the strength and reach of the FanDuel brand have been the key drivers of this growth. In Q2, we crossed the $500 million mark in quarterly U.S. revenues for the first time, with our U.S. division now the second largest in revenue terms within the Flutter Group. As a result of our strong customer acquisition and retention, we now expect to generate between $1.8 billion and $2 billion in U.S. revenue this year. While delighted with the performance of the business as a whole, our market share in sports betting particularly stands out. We finished Q2 with a 45% share of the U.S. online sports betting market, leading in new and more mature states alike. And while we believe there are good opportunities for us to grow our gaming share as we better leverage more of Flutter's in-house capabilities, it is the shape and pipeline of new state regulation, with its emphasis on sports betting, that is particularly exciting. We now expect up to nine further U.S. states to regulate mobile sports betting by the end of 2022, close to doubling the proportion of the U.S. population that will be able to sports bet legally online. And of those nine states, just one is expected to regulate gaming initially. Given the strength of our sports betting offering and the key competitive advantages we enjoy in this space, we feel this positions FanDuel very well to compound its leadership position. Secondly, our performance outside the U.S. has exceeded our expectations during the first half. In both our UK and Ireland and Australia divisions, online earnings grew by more than 50% year-on-year in the first half. This has been driven by recreational customer growth. We grew our average monthly players, or AMPs, by 44% in the UK and Ireland and by 52% in Australia in H1. These growth rates reflect an ongoing shift of customers from retail to online. In the UK and Ireland, where we've only emerged fully from stay-at-home restrictions relatively recently, it is probably a little bit soon to say definitively how permanent that shift in player behaviour has been. But in Australia, which was largely unaffected by COVID for much of H1, and where our retail competition was open, we now believe that the events of the last 18 months have resulted in a permanent step change in the size of our business there, with customer retention that has exceeded even our most optimistic expectations. In international, the revenue decline following the spike in player activity in H1 last year was less pronounced than we expected, albeit the division did continue to benefit from a tailwind from ongoing stay-at-home restrictions in parts of Europe. We are transforming the shape and quality of our international division by investing more in regulated and high-growth markets with encouraging early signs. Our customer base in H1 was just 3% below the elevated levels of H1 last year. What this all means is that we have today issued 2021 EBITDA guidance for the group ex-US of 1.27 to 1.37 billion sterling, materially above current consensus. Finally, we've announced this morning that we now believe our US business will be profitable in 2023 based on expected timetable for new state regulation. We believe this will have a transformational impact on the overall earnings, cash generation and balance sheet profile of the group. To be clear, we are not setting a target date for profitability. The date our US business turns profitable remains an output for us. We remain entirely focused on growing the embedded value of the business by acquiring as many customers as we can, for as long as we can, generate attractive returns on investment. The 2023 projection instead reflects simple mathematics. We now believe we will reach a tipping point in 2023 where the sheer scale of our existing US customer base and the positive contribution those customers generate will more than offset the cost of acquiring additional new customers and the more fixed operating cost base of the business. Slides 29 and 30 of our presentation cover this in more detail. Our projection assumes that none of California, Florida, or Texas launch online sports betting or gaming before 2024. Should one of those large states regulate sooner, our level of investment in new player acquisition would be higher and profitability could be delayed. But such a scenario would represent a nice problem to have, as it would mean our TAM will be bigger again. If the US does turn profitable in 2023, it is not difficult to see what that would mean for Flutter's overall earnings and cash flow profile and the leverage benefits that would bring. Overall then, I'm delighted with how the business is performing and the longer term prospects for the group. With that, I'll be happy to take any questions you have. As always, in the interest of giving everyone a chance to ask their question, can I ask you to limit yourselves to two questions each to start with? If there's time at the end, I'll be more than happy to take follow-ups. With that, I'll hand over to Joe.
Thank you. Yes, if you would like to ask a question today, please key star, then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw that question, simply key star two. Just a reminder, everyone, for questions, you just need to key star, then one on your telephone. Thank you. Okay, we have our first question. That's coming from Michael Mitchell from Davy. Go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes. Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Johnson. Thanks for taking my questions. Two, if I could. Firstly, on the US, and one of the more notable features of your performance in market share terms for us has been, you know, what appears to be a strengthening in your position as each state becomes more established. And you even commented in terms of market share, kind of across New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Indiana, being 51% in the period. I wonder, could you comment on that dynamic, why you think the gap between FanDuel and other competitors tends to widen, and how sustainable those structural drivers are? And then secondly, on Australia, if I could, despite snap lockdowns in the country, that country did emerge from the more sustained COVID disruption 7 or 8 months ago, and yet AMPs in Q2 were up 61% year-on-year against a high watermark. I wonder, could you comment again just in terms of how, you know, why you've been so successful in retaining what looks to be the majority of the retail customers you acquired through COVID disruption? Thank you.
Thank you. Michael, look, I think the question you ask about the US is an important one, because it is true that we are seeing our position strengthening in sports. And I think it's, you know, it's down to the factors that we've talked about for a long time. You know, we do have a fantastic product, and we do benefit from having, you know, brilliant pricing and risk management capabilities, not just in FanDuel, but ones which we can leverage from across the globe as well. And if I, you know, if I reference a few pages in the presentation, you know, if you look at, you know, page 33, for example, and you look at the benefits we're getting from, you know, same game parlay as an example of what we're doing from a product perspective, I think, you know, that's a really good example. And it's one thing, you know, to be able to sort of buy these products in externally, which often leaves them sort of sat on the sort of the side of the product. But it's another thing to actually develop it in-house as we've done and have it an integral part of the customer experience. And I think that is important. And if you look at page 35, you can see that we've seen some very structural benefits from margin, which have actually only, you know, only grown in recent times, as actually, you know, customers have taken advantage of some of the range of products we have. And I think one of the things that we're sharing today that, you know, we hadn't commented on before, you see on page 37, is, you know, actually the database we have for DFS has almost doubled, you know, since 2017, and that's, you know, as a result of the sort of big investments we've been putting into the FanDuel brand. So I feel like a lot of this stuff is sustainable. We are continuing to invest in product. We are bringing more of our markets that we're, you know, that we're managing from a pricing risk management perspective, you know, in-house, and we are continuing to pour more money into, you know, building and developing the FanDuel, you know, brand, and with all the benefits of that drive. So, yeah, I think we're in a strong position. With regards to your question about Australia, You know, it is true that the Australians have had a very different path through COVID to, you know, to a lot of the rest of the world, and unfortunately a lot of them are now back into lockdown there. But look, I do believe we have seen a permanent step change in the size of the business. And whilst, you know, last year there was not a lot of sport going on, but racing continued. And so that has undoubtedly, you know, led to, you know, a growth in AMPs. I think what we're seeing is a lot of customers, you know, trialed and sampled our online product in the period and actually found that they really liked it. You know, so, you know, we've got some fantastic product innovations in the Australian markets. We just launched Bet With Mates, which has been a fantastic, you know, way of bringing in, you know, another wave of new customers. And of course, we're offering, you know, generosity, you know, and value to our customers in the market in ways that the retail monopoly provider can't do. So I think that's what's leading to us having a permanent step change in the size of the business. And of course, we're getting brilliant operating leverage off the back of that as well, because we, you know, we haven't had to sort of grow our business at the same time. And look, we'll talk more about that in September on the 22nd when we do our Investor Day. So, you know, it'll be a good opportunity for you to talk to Barney and the rest of the team.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Ed Young from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line's open.
Hi. Thank you for taking my questions, and thanks for the additional disclosure on the US. You know, very useful. My first question is on the US. You mentioned a couple of times, Peter, direct casino acquisition. And I note your well-made point around the next wave of states being sport. Most of what you spoke about in the presentation was, it sounded like, the pipeline of product improvements you expect to put into that area. But can you talk a little bit more around about brand? I appreciate you've got Stardust, and perhaps you could touch on that. But do you think you need another direct acquisition brand? How do you think about casino or gaming databases in the States? And then my second question is on international, sort of the mirror image of the rest of the group in terms of sort of gaming versus sports, I guess. I know some of your launches over the last year have been even on third-party platforms, I guess, for sort of pace, and you're going to move to in-house. So can you talk a little bit about that transition, how you think sports and international growth in general might look, and what the timeline for that? I know you said it won't be overnight, but just to give us an idea of when growth in that area might look a bit more like growth in some of your other markets on the sports side, or strength in that side. That'd be very useful. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Look, and I realise we've put a lot of information out, and, you know, to you all early this morning, so apologies if I've ruined all of your breakfasts, but there was just no other way for us to do it, I'm afraid. Look, as it relates to the US, you know, it is right that we've got a very strong position in sports. You know, FanDuel has always been synonymous with that, and, you know, the DFS database has given us a strong advantage, which has allowed us to build to the position that we've got to. I think it is also worth remembering that when we think about casino, we run the world's largest online casino business, and, you know, have tremendous capabilities, knowledge, and know-how in doing so. And so, you know, the plan that we have for the US is to make sure that we can bring, you know, a lot of that expertise into the US market. And we, you know, we will continue to do so, whether it's, you know, the products that we've, you know, developed and grown in-house. And actually, you know, when I look at the proportion of our revenues in the international casino business that comes from our own products, you know, it's now sort of approaching sort of 20%, you know, which I think positions us well and shows that we're good at building our own products out. So, you know, that's one thing. But, you know, we're also getting much better at, you know, improving the cross-sell journeys that we see in the US. So, for example, we're able to offer some promotional mechanics to users of the same game parlay product that gave them, in states where it was relevant, access to some free spins on casino. And having the largest, you know, user base of sports bettors gives us a tremendous, you know, ability to cross-sell into casino in the US. You're right, we do have the iconic Stardust casino brand, which we're, you know, we're using in the US market. But, you know, I think it's, you know, there's a lot of plans, and we've got a lot of, you know, opportunity to extend and improve what we do, you know, for the FanDuel brand as well. But, you know, I think the most important point, you know, is actually the fact that we'll, you know, we continue to lead in sports, and that gives us a great platform to grow from in casino. And of course, you know, 8 of the 9 next states to launch are going to be sports only.
I mean, I'd probably add that you remember that where we have states where we're doing gaming as well as sports betting, we have market access partners like, you know, our friends in Boyd. You know, we work very hard in terms of cross-sell from those, you know, offline databases to online as well. So we do access, you know, through our market access partners, you know, more online potential customers as well. So that's another area where we're working very hard.
And look, regarding your question about international, look, it is right that we have used you know, some third-party platforms. And so, you know, we've done that recently in Colombia just to give us the ability to get into market quickly. It's not dissimilar to what we did in the US market, remember, where, you know, we used third-party platforms, and when the time was right, we've moved that business over onto our core platform. You'll also have seen that during the period we announced the acquisition of Singular, which is the technology stack that powers Adjarabet, you know, our business that's so successful in Georgia and Armenia. And, you know, that gives us, you know, an additional set of capabilities that will be useful for us in that part of the world and indeed possibly elsewhere. So, you know, we are developing out our capabilities in-house. As it relates to putting the global betting platform into the international business, we hope that we'll be able to trial a small, you know, possibly, you know, some, you know, some markets, you know, towards the end of this year. But, you know, as you say, it's going to take a while before we get that fully rolled out. The thing I'd focus on in international is the, you know, is the success we're seeing actually in casino. You know, the business is doing incredibly well there. It's now become our biggest vertical. And the investments we've been making to, you know, to grow that business through things like, you know, affiliates and some of the campaigns we've put around have been very successful. We've got 5 times the number of customers coming direct into that business than we saw pre-COVID. So, you know, we're pleased with the progress we're making in international and casino as well.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Karanjot Gruhl from Bank of America. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, morning, guys. I think just building on that question on brands, we saw DraftKings acquiring Golden Nugget yesterday. You've got 5 brands already in the US. So maybe could you comment on the rationale and potential benefits of having the several brands in the US? Is there going to be a time where you ramp up investment or focus into other brands other than FanDuel? And then the second question is around your US 2023 positive EBITDA. That's really encouraging. I know in the past you've mentioned a potential IPO for the US. Do you still see much virtue in spreading out the US beyond just the potential valuation crystallization? And if the US were to separate, would you expect the US EBITDA to come down, say, losing some of the benefits of having Flutter's group level scale benefits?
So look, we've obviously, you know, shared quite a lot of information with the market today in terms of, you know, how successful we've been using, you know, the FanDuel brand for customer acquisition. And you can, you know, if you look at the you know, chart on, you know, page 27 of the presentation, you can see, you know, as we've grown, you know, through the number of states, the number of customers we've acquired, and, you know, we've now got over 2.2 million sportsbook and gaming customers at a CPA of $291. So, look, whilst we continue to see the results that we're seeing, you know, we are going to invest very heavily behind the FanDuel brand, and that's very successful for us. You are right that we have a number of other brands available to us in the market, and, you know, we will continue to, you know, push on those as well. And I think, you know, TVG is a, you know, good example where we've seen real benefits as we've, you know, helped grow that business. But we've also launched racing under the FanDuel brand as well. And, you know, and we have, you know, as we were just discussing with Ed, the Stardust brand. So I think we have, you know, we like operating, if we can, in markets with multiple brands. I think it gives us a good opportunity to target different groups of customers who've got different needs, and, you know, we'll continue to do that and invest as much money as we can when we see as compelling a set of you know, acquisition costs to lifetime value dynamics as we shared with you in the presentation. I think the second part of your question, I think it would be worth making a very important point of clarification that, you know, whilst we have been contemplating an IPO of a small stake of FanDuel, if we were to do that, we would consider it, to continue to be a sort of control subsidiary of the group, and therefore nothing would change in terms of the way in which that business would operate, in terms of it continuing to provide, support to the rest of the group through things like its pricing and risk management capabilities and enhancements it builds to things like the global betting platform, and nor would anything change in terms of that part of the business being able to benefit from the broader Flutter family. And I think, one of the undoubted things that's helped driven the success of the FanDuel business over the years since we've owned it is the fact that we've had so many cheerleaders on the side supporting it. There's 5,000 engineers across, the rest of the divisions in Flutter who are helping support the FanDuel business, and that's a very important part of it. So, if we were to go down a path of an IPO, it would only ever be for a small stake, and it would be important it would be continued to be as a controlled subsidiary, and that would allow us to maintain the sort of symbiotic relationship that we see between that division and the rest of the group.
Okay, perfect. That's incredibly helpful to know the economics will be the same. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Simon Davis from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning. Two from me too, please. Firstly, you talk about 160 basis point decline in net revenue margin across the group. Can you talk a bit about how that breaks down, i.e. how much of that is down to bonusing increases, how much down to pricing? And can you give us a bit of a feel in terms of your pricing strategy in the US now? Are you still increasing bonusing or suppressing pricing to support growth rates there? And my second question is on the international division, obviously a big impact from online poker. Can you break out what percentage of revenues now come from online poker? And has that business finally stabilized year on year? And roughly how is it running as a percentage relative to pre-pandemic levels?
So maybe, Simon, I can deal with the first question. So we talked about the 160 basis points reduction. Actually, about half of that was due to reduced luck across the group, reduced positive sports results. So while still positive, about 120 basis points in the half year period in 2020, it was actually 200 basis points of positive sports results. And secondly, we have invested more in generosity, which is the other element, and that's helped us drive the fantastic performance we've seen in terms of our AMP growth across the group. So we continue to work on optimizing the right level of generosity versus drive and how that plays into driving the top line. So those are, to me, the critical points.
And look, as it relates to our pricing strategy in the US, when you look at the page in the presentation on margin, which is on 35, don't think that the fact that this line is heading upwards is anything to do with us moving our sort of core underlying pricing. We're not moving our of VIG or over rounds, depending on whether you want to take a sort of an American way of looking or a European way of looking at it. We've maintained our very, very tight pricing. It's actually through product mix that we've actually seen those margins change. I think the other thing to the other part of your question was around the international division.
Sorry, can I just add one other point? Because of our tight pricing in the US, and because the U.S. is becoming such a so much bigger component of the group, actually our expected margin was down marginally in the first half over the first half year before, only because of the very aggressive pricing we've got in the States. So there's sort of three components: a little bit more aggressive, a small reduction in expected margin due to the U.S. becoming a greater component, a bigger step down in luck, which is the bigger element, and then a smaller increase in the promotional spend, just to give three moving parts in terms of the overall group.
Okay. Look, Simon, in terms of the second part of your question around what's going on from a poker perspective, if you look at the gaming AMPs in the first half and compare them with the prior year, which, you know, was a very tough comparative period. You know, they're down 9%. We still maintain 91% of our customer levels, in 2021. You know, we had our second largest tournament ever in poker with Sunday Millions in the period. I think we're doing great things around, live, the live streaming category in poker, where, PokerStars branded and sponsored content had, around 2/3 share of all poker views on Twitch. That part of the business is doing well. I'm pleased with, we're making some changes to the way in which we look at reward and generosity for that part of the business. So, we're trialing a new reward scheme. But I think, we said, today that we've seen that business perform better than we expected. We saw a large influx of new customers last year, and we had expected volumes to be off more than they have been. And I think that the team have done a great job in retaining those customers into things like casino and some of the cross-selling to sports, albeit we know there's a lot more to do in particularly in sports.
And can you split out what the poker component is within international and whether that has stabilised?
Can we disclose that, Jonathan? Well, Simon, we'll come back to you. I don't have the figures to hand.
Okay, thank you very much.
I mean, I think the easiest way to look at it, Simon, is that in terms of the gaming revenues in H1, it's roughly equal between the two, but actually casino overtook poker in the second quarter.
Thank you. The next question has come from Joe Thomas from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. A couple of questions, please. One is the UK Responsible Gambling Initiatives. I think you said that's going to be ramped up in the second half of this year. I'm just wondering if there's any sort of further quantification that you can give as to the drag that that's having and perhaps the tailwind as we go into next year as these, as sort of comps normalise. And indeed, whether that's going to be rolled out further across the business beyond UK and Ireland. And then the second question, I'm intrigued by some of the news coming out of India recently, in Tamil Nadu in particular, and I'm just wondering if there's any if there are any sort of high-level thoughts that you could give us about the scale of the market opportunity there and further changes.
Hi, Joe. So look, we're not putting a number on the changes that we're making around RG. It's captured within our guidance. Yeah, I think it is worth just reflecting that when you look at the brands that we have operating in the UK, think about Skybet and also with Paddy Power, we have the very, very recreational focused brands in the UK, and I think we are continuously looking for additional things we can do. But I think when I look at how the market could evolve and what the Gambling Commission may decide to do, I think we're very well placed. Your question about whether we'll be sort of rolling these things out further. Look, I think if you look at what we're doing, what we've done recently in Ireland, we've unilaterally decided to introduce a number of changes which I think are right to put in that market, which we haven't been asked to do. So for example, the moves we've taken around credit cards. In Australia, we're undertaking a number of activities there specific to that market. I think it is important that we look at this on a sort of market by market dynamic. Whether that's the focus we've got around sort of deposit limits or the work we're doing around affordability, there are different ways we need to sort of manage this. And of course, where we get learnings from one part of the world, we'll take those elsewhere. Your question about India and Tamil Nadu is a good one. So, for people on the call who aren't aware, Tamil Nadu have recently published a change in their view around legislating skill games, which particularly positively benefits our business there. It is a large part. Used to be a large part of the market in India before it was temporarily closed down, so we're excited that it comes up again, and we think we have a well-placed brand to capitalize on it.
Is that just the rummy? I mean, is any sort of quantification you could give us on or views on where that might end up and you know, impact on different states, etc.?
Yeah, I think what we'd prefer to do is, you know, it's a relatively small business at this point. We are very excited about the prospects for it, and you know, at a time when we think it should be on the radar, we'll certainly bring it forward. But you know, I think it does start to set an interesting legislative framework in one state, and we hope that that might therefore push out across other states which potentially have a less positive view on skill games.
I mean, look, we have a podium position with Junglee in the market, and we're taking share. You know, we'll tell you that, Joe. You know,
we'll come back with more detail later. We'll leave it at that, I think.
Thank you. The next question is from Gavin Keller from Goodbody Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Morning, Peter. Morning, Jonathan. And just my first question on the US. Obviously, great detail today in the release and the presentation. We can all guess the multiple competitive advantages you have and the scale advantage. Just on CPAs, you mentioned the $291 CPA you've seen. Can you give any sort of comment on how the CPAs have trended in the business? And then how they're trending, let's say, across states. Obviously, gaming states probably different to sports, but how CPAs are panning out across different states. And then as you look forward to this NFL season, do you expect a big increase in competition? Are you building in a big increase in competition around marketing, et cetera?
Gavin, we give you one bit of detail and you want to know the next bit. I mean, look, I think the most important thing is to look at the stat that we published, that we get a 1.2 times payback, you know, on those $291 CPAs, and the fact that in the second year, and albeit this is, you know, we haven't had that many customers in the second year, but you know, the data we have for the second year shows that actually the contribution we get from the second year is greater than it was in the first year. So yeah, I think, you know, when you extrapolate that and start thinking about what that means, the lifetime value of those customers are and how they compare with the CPAs, you can see why we're very pleased with the sort of the embedded value we're creating in the business, and why we've been, you know, acquiring as many customers as we can, frankly, and we'll continue to do so.
Yeah. Realistically, Gavin, we don't obsess about CPAs. What we obsess about is CPAs versus LTVs, and that is completely our focus. And if we have to spend $400 in one state and $150 in another state because that's the right CAC to LTV equation, then that's what we do. We analyze it on that level. So we are, you know, almost the CPA is an outcome of how we invest against the LTV.
That's perfect. Very clear. And so just one small follow-up question on the US. The Golden Nugget and DraftKings deal yesterday, does that have any implications for your New Jersey license agreement?
You're referring to the fact that we use the Golden Nugget for market access. DraftKings have acquired the online businesses from Golden Nugget, so we don't believe it has any bearing on our licensing.
Perfect. That's very clear. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Jonathan.
It's an expensive way for them to see our market share data.
Cheers, Gavin.
Thanks, Emil.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Joe Stoff from Susquehanna. Please go ahead. Your line's open.
Thank you. Good morning. I wanted to ask a couple questions, if I could, on the U.S. With now the migration of your in-house sports platform completed, I wanted to ask, you know, how to think about maybe the growth in products that you might be able to offer, you know, especially this sort of football season, at least football season in the U.S., this second half. And then the second question was, you know, you provided a lot of data in the slide deck as well as the press release, and you indicated, just this is a question on kind of sourcing new OSB customers in the U.S., you had indicated about 40% of your OSB customers came from your daily fantasy database, and you indicated about a third came from, I guess, overall marketing efforts. I was wondering if the difference in terms of the rest of customer acquisitions came from your TVG database?
Okay. So Joe, to take your second question first, you know, look, we have acquired, as we said, 40% of our customers from our DFS database, and a big chunk from marketing. The balance isn't coming from TVG. I mean, you know, there is some degree of cross-selling there, but you know, I think the thing that actually we're finding that's really beneficial is there's a lot of businesses coming to us through sort of refer a friend type of mechanisms, and the Spread the Love campaign has been very successful for us in terms of that type of viral acquisition, which is helping us. When we think about the benefits we get on our business from having the platforms all in house, there's a multitude of them. We had some outages in the last football season because frankly the volumes we were pushing through the third party platforms, they just couldn't cope with it. So we are hoping that now that we have everything under our own sort of control, we'll have much better stability going into this season. We can obviously bring a lot more of our pricing in house, and it's something that I referenced in the commentary I gave over the presentation, in terms of the proportion of our products that we can price and put in house, and there are benefits to that in terms of our ability to then manage the models and ensure that we increase the proportion of things like cash out. So there's lots of things that we have on the product roadmap, and there are some things we wouldn't want to share with our competitors, frankly. But having it in our own gift gives us a lot more control.
And also, I mean, the amount of tech effort that it's taken to actually get all of this stuff done and get across the GBP, we can then repurpose that and get it focused on really making sure that we can develop all of those bells and whistles for our customers.
I can appreciate that. Thank you. If I could squeeze one additional, maybe the win rate, is very high in the second quarter in the U.S. In a seasonally weak period. Is it fair to assume that, what's the right way to think about that, I guess, kind of going forward in the second half, especially maybe the third quarter?
Yeah, sure. About half of, we increased our structural margins very positively in the second quarter over the second quarter in the year before. A big uplift in structural margins, really driven by that same game parlay product. But so that was about half of the uplift. Then the other half was was sports results, which obviously get magnified by the same game parlay effect. So it's just a kind of a double positive there. But the more we can keep the penetration increasing in same game parlays, the more we can improve the structural margins. And this is what we've seen in other markets. And in Australia, we still see the penetration going up in same game parlays in the UK and I, and into sort of bet builder products, which are almost more sort of do it yourself, build your own bet. So we think there's a long way to go on this. We're only at first base, I think, in your terms, in terms of where we're getting to, in terms of the development of the product and the penetration into the customer base.
I will just remind everybody, if you do wish to ask a question, please key star then one on your telephone. So star then one for any questions, please. The next question is coming from Richard Stuber from Numis. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just two questions for me, please. The first question, in Australia, the average player's up 52%. I think you implied that a lot of it comes from retail customers. Do you think you've also taken any market share from the other online bookmakers over in Australia? And the second question on the US, I guess as you sort of mentioned on the call, there's been lots of M&A activity in the US in the last few weeks. Do you think there's any sort of product or technology deficiencies within your FanDuel offering which could benefit from bolt-on M&A? Or is the sort of outstanding litigation with Fox or balance sheet, is that a current impediment to M&A?
Right, Richard. In terms of the question, look, we've definitely taken market share in Australia. So that's the simple answer to the question. The slightly more difficult one is precisely where all those customers have come from. Now, we can see a lot of those customers are sort of exhibiting behavior and profiles where we believe that they have come from using the retail monopoly service in Australia. We definitely have benefited from those customers trialing our products in a way that they may not have done in the past, and finding that they enjoy it and like the value and generosity we provide them, as well as the enhanced product experience. There's almost certainly been some gains in online, but it's very hard to sort of gauge it when you compare this year with last year because of the the fact that the sporting calendar is so different. When we look at our business and compare it with a couple of years ago, to see that the level of profitability is nearly three times, and actually, even if you just look at the growth we've seen in customer numbers, year on year, 50%, I think that the team in Australia have done a great job, and we'll hear much more from them on the 22nd of September. When you look at the US business, I suspect that our continued growth and strength in our position we have in the market is what's driving people to undertake M&A activity in a way to try and give themselves some capabilities to catch us. And look, we will work very, very hard. We can, we have done ever since we first decided to go hard after America in January 2018 to make sure that we have all the capabilities that we need to set ourselves up to win in the market. At this moment, we think we have everything that we need, and you can see the success that we're seeing in the business. I think there's a lot of exciting opportunities in front of us. There's those nine new states which are opening up. We've got everything sat on our tech platform. Eight of those nine states are sports focused. And the size and scale of the FanDuel organization now is just at a completely different level to any of the other competitors in the market. So we're getting our flywheel going as fast as we can, and we're investing a lot of money in developing product services and capabilities around it, and if we identified something that we thought we needed to acquire as a bolt-on, we would do that. There's nothing that would get in our way at the moment.
Cool, that's great. And could I ask just a follow-up? Obviously FanDuel is going phenomenally well. Are there any metrics you could share in terms of Foxbet, how that's going, and what sort of revenue that achieved in the first half or EBITDA loss?
I think what we shared was that FanDuel made up 93% of the revenues in the first half, and we don't split out the EBITDA performance by the businesses.
Thank you. The next question is coming from James Rowland Clark from Barclays. Go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, morning everyone. Just two questions, please, both on the US. The first, are you close to finding a new CEO for FanDuel? And then secondly, I wonder if you could just provide a little bit of colour on what you're seeing in terms of the competitive environment going into the NFL season, given there's a number of sort of medium-sized players who want to have a good crack at the market. And should we be surprised at all if we see your highly, very strong market-leading sports betting market share drop off a tiny bit during the autumn? Thank you.
Well, James, if you're wanting to put your name forward for the CEO job, it's probably not, you wouldn't want to do it in this public forum. But look, there have been a lot of people who have come and talked to me about it. It's a very exciting job, I think. In fact, I don't think there's many better jobs in sports or entertainment in the United States. So we've met an awful lot of people, and we are close to putting in place our long-term CEO. In the business. I will say Amy's done a very good job for us since she picked up the reins from Matt, and as you can see, the business hasn't missed a beat. In terms of the competitive environment, I remember talking about the competitive intensity that we expected to see coming, when we did our first Capital Markets Day at the Meadowlands. And we're saying that we expected it would be harder with the next season, and that's the way that we continuously think about it. We are not at all complacent. We are completely paranoid. We're regularly waking up in the middle of the night, panicking about how people are going to attack us. And state by state, we're taking them on and working out how we continue to win. And that's the way that we're thinking about it. And, you know, look, we've never set ourselves a market share target. You know, if we had done, we would never have set ourselves the, you know, the levels that we find we're achieving. What we will continue to do, as Jonathan, you know, mentioned earlier, is we'll look at it on a state-by-state basis and look at the, you know, the amount of money we can spend based on the returns that we're seeing from the customers. You know, I think the one thing that we would wish that we had done was we would wish that we'd realized that the, you know, the customers were going to be as valuable as they've turned out to be, because, you know, we've seen better levels of retention from them, we've seen higher levels of cross-selling from them, and we've seen, you know, higher usage of the product and actually better margins because of the mix. So actually the customers have ended up being more valuable than we anticipated, and it probably means we should have spent even more money initially acquiring even more customers. But, you know, we'll try to rectify our models and improve them and make sure we acquire as much business as we can. And, you know, the point at which we get to profitability or the market share stuff are all outputs for us. You know, it's the maths that drives us to that point where we'll see profitability in 2023, because it will be the ratio between the number of existing customers we have and the embedded value that they have in the business, the contribution they're generating, and the ratio of them to the volume of new customers we get to. And once you get past the tipping point, then of course the business becomes profitable. But, you know, that's not our focus. Market share is not our focus. It's building as big a business with the return characteristics that we can see today as we can. And of course, we're in the nice position that we've got operating leverage in the business. So, you know, we can add in those 9 new states that we'll launch in the next 18 months without having to add huge amounts of sort of operating costs. And clearly there'll be extra marketing investment. But, you know, we have the risk, and, you know, we've got the pricing risk management teams. We've got big marketing capabilities. We've got big commercial functions.
You know, just to reiterate the point, you know, market share is a function of 2 things. It's a function of how successful you are in acquiring customers, and that's obviously driven by how much you spend and how well you spend it. But the revenue is driven by the quality of your product, the retention and the stickiness of that product, and therefore the wallet share that you gain from the customers who are in the market and are accessing your product. That's why we talked so much today about the product, because it is critical in winning in the market. You can acquire as many customers as you want, but you need the product to be able to make sure the customers have a great experience and stick around.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Christine Zhu from RBC. Please go ahead. Your line's open.
Hi, yes, good morning. Thank you. So my first question is just on the percentage of regulated markets. And we showed in the presentation that you've seen that increase from 82 to 90%. Do you expect that to increase more in future, or are you sort of happy with where that is at the moment? And just a second question on the US specifically, on your sort of media and partnerships with sports teams and sports leagues, etc. I think on page 38 you mentioned that you believe you have the highest share of voice on some of the regional networks. Just wondered if you could give a bit more colour, just in light of the fact that we're seeing lots of competitors sign, you know, lots of deals with various teams, leagues, etc. Do you think you've got more partnerships versus others, or is there something else that's giving you the highest share of voice? And how important do you actually think these are for you, you know, given that you've got the FanDuel base, etc. So yeah, any more colour on that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Christine, in terms of your first question, we said naturally it would increase from 82 to 90 just because, you know, at that time we knew the US would make up a greater component. Now, obviously, you can see on one of the first charts in the presentation that the US has already, you know, moved to be our second biggest division by revenue in Q2. And as the US grows significantly, that will mean that mathematically, you know, that will increase regulated. The other point to note is that, you know, of our unregulated markets, you know, there are 3 of our top markets, you know, Canada, the Netherlands and Brazil, which are in the process of going towards regulation. So naturally, you know, our percentage is going to move up towards, you know, 95% in the, you know, short to medium term. You know, there will always be a series of markets whereby, you know, they are moving towards regulation and haven't regulated. So do I ever think it's going to be zero? That's a very long way off. But I'm very comfortable with having a pipeline of markets which sit within unregulated that are moving towards regulated.
Yeah, and look, Christine, in terms of your question about, you know, what we're doing with all the sort of different media assets that we have, the, you know, the deals with leagues, teams and stuff, you know, we spent more than $300 million in the first half, which, you know, is greater than the revenues of most of our competitors. So, you know, it's the scale, it's the breadth, it's the depth of the assets that we have, you know, that we'll continue to, you know, invest behind, and where we find one that works, we'll spend more on it. So there's a lot of flexibility built into this. So, you know, there's not one of those that I'd necessarily call out. The other, you know, aside from, you know, the quality of our team, you know, in the US, who are executing so well for us. So, you know, I think they spent the money very effectively and efficiently, and you can see that from the CPA figures and the numbers of customers we've acquired. And it will continue to, you know, to innovate and push forward, you know, going into this next football season where, you know, everything starts again, really. Okay, Joe, I think we're done on questions now. So thank you very much, everybody. You know, appreciate your time this morning, and particularly the time listening to Jonathan and I take you through the presentation. I think there is some very important information that we have shared in the market, or shared with the market today. So if you haven't had a chance, I'd encourage you to spend some time listening to it and going through the materials. Thank you all very much for your support.
Thanks.